Thank you, Rabbi Brandt, and I want to welcome Rabbi Sobolovsky. And knowing how early he got up this morning to be here, he already informed me he may have a kium and ad lo yada right here while we're learning together this morning. So I appreciate his presence, and I really think, once again, true to everything that we know of Rabbi Sobolovsky and his Torah, once again, just a shining light and an example of what it means to be a Rav, a Mora B'Yisrael. I want to thank the Freedmans publicly again for sponsoring this wonderful program month to month in our shul, and really just thank you on behalf of our shul and our whole community, not just Or Torah, but really the whole community, if I could be bold enough to speak for the whole community, because this is really a treat every time we have it, and halavai noch weiter. Rabbi Brandt and the Kollel have moved things along quite beautifully over the last months, and we are very excited about some forthcoming program that's going to take place in the community. The dinner that just took place, I think, was rather successful, and I want to just personally, again, offer thanks to Rabbi Brandt for everything, both personal and professional, that he brings to for me and to the whole community writ large. I want to welcome also Sam Meadow to the Yeshiva University Torah Mitzvah Kollel team. Very excited you're on board with the Kollel. This morning, let's get to work a little bit to learn. This morning's topic at first blush seems rather academic. And I'm going to open by saying that it is academic. It's at best la halacha v'lo lamaaseh, if that, but as you will soon see, and hopefully by the time we have come full circle, you will see that hopefully that some of this does have some ideas to think about within the world of the halacha, maybe something in hashkafa as well, about what geirut means, what conversion means, what our relationship to our enemies means, and what tshuva means, the capacity for tshuva. And that's the title this morning, with open arms or clenched fists. I see here of clenched fists, but or clenched fists, could Haman convert to Judaism? This is not such a theoretical question, although I will say again and again, I'm strictly speaking sashir, it's for the purpose of learning, but not as a practical matter in either sense. I will offer one other caveat, which is if you are leaving in the middle, or if you're listening to a shiur or something, you really should not walk around quoting half sentences or little sound bites, especially in a shiur like this. You got to wait till the end. So if you're planning to leave in the middle, and say, you won't believe what Rabbi Engel said this morning, wait till the end. You got to hear the whole story and the whole picture in order to see different sides of the story. Turn to the first page. First page is notes for notes. So the second page. This is just two stories that are rather contemporary about our usual best example of the worst people that the Jewish people have faced in the lifetime of some of the members of our congregations. And we are survivors all, in the sense that as a people we met up with, according to many opinions, halachically Amalek, and at least ideationally, certainly in terms of the nefarious designs of the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, and may their memory be erased and obliterated, certainly we have seen the face of rank evil. The question, however, becomes a lot thornier. Apparently there's a movie that just came out the last year. It's about to be released. I'm sorry, someone sent me the trailer, called Hitler's Children, all about how the children of the major figures of the Nazi party and war machine and genocidal campaigns that they ran, how they grapple with being descended of Nazis. But here's something even closer to home. I'm going to read you two. These are contemporary stories. This piece from Yitta Halberstadt, my fault. It should have given attribution. I believe this is on the OU website, but it just didn't come out in the desktop publisher. Light in all the dark places, a story by Yitta Halberstam. It's said that the truth will set you free, but when an intrepid Israeli reporter browbeat Dr. Daniel Brown The name has been changed into going public 5 years ago. The aftermath was traumatic. I'd always been open about my identity with both my family and friends, he recalls, and no one had ever been less than supportive and warm. But this particular Israeli newspaper misrepresented its agenda to me. I didn't know that it intended to publicize and sensationalize my interview the way it ultimately did. The story was printed in the weekend edition of the paper, and all day long, on Thursday and Erev Shabbat, radio commercials continually blasted every 15 minutes. Hitler's nephew's grandson, right here in Israel, and a Jew. The repercussions left my family shaken. Brown's sons, enrolled in a modern Orthodox yeshiva in Jerusalem, were spat upon by several of their classmates and called Nazis. A handful of neighbors studiously avoided Brown when they encountered him on the street. And in shul, the Shabbat after the story aired, a number of social acquaintances who normally greeted him with hearty handshakes turned the other way. To these people who had known me as Jewish for 25 years, I had become overnight a pariah, says Brown. I thought I was sharing a valuable lesson with others, that the past can be recreated, and that a person always has the opportunity to change. But actually, it was I who was taught the lesson. Some people will never let you change. Not surprisingly, Brown wanted to use a pseudonym in this article. Still, the incident became a litmus, is becoming a litmus test for the varieties of human behavior. The responses were not uniformly negative. In the same synagogue that Shabbat, I was also the recipient of a clearly symbolic act of acceptance, says Brown. I was given the first aliyah. Of course, that's somewhat of a question, how a Ger could get an aliyah of Kohen, but leave that aside. Okay. This told me in no uncertain terms that the majority of the shul members regarded me as a full Jew and an accepted member of the community. Sadly, however, the decency of the majority didn't nullify the crude conduct of the minority. We were badly wounded by what happened. That's story one. Story two from this is the Independent, the newspaper in Britain. Sunday, March 5th, 2006, descendant of Goering converts to Judaism. Matthias Goering says, I used to feel cursed by my name, now I feel blessed. The 49-year-old physiotherapist, a descendant of Hermann Goering, Adolf Hitler's right-hand man, is wearing a Jewish skull cap with a Star of David pendant round his neck. After being brought up to despise Jews, he has embraced their faith. And although he has yet to formally convert to Judaism, he keeps kosher dietary rules, celebrates Shabbat, and is learning Hebrew. These are stories from the last couple of years, two, 3 years, and they are in the news. I say again, it's debatable whether the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, have a din of Amalek or do not have a din of Amalek. So obviously at a certain level you have to allow me some license in order to give this shiur, but just thinking about it, what if the article had said, you know, Haman's descendants decided we'd like to be Jewish now, we know what our great-great-grandfather has done, however, we feel otherwise. And of course, as we are approaching Parshat Zohar again, and we're going to read about the mitzvah of Mechiat Amalek that we're also familiar with, where we are given a commandment, a black fire on white fire in Parshat Ki Tetzeh, which we read as a mitzvah d'oraita to read, and a mitzvah d'oraita to fulfill, to wipe out, erase, and obliterate the memory of Amalek. We ask the question, what would happen if a descendant of Amalek came and decided they wanted to be Jewish? Would that be permissible? Would we separate between Haman and Haman's children? Haman's 10 sons, who are not mentioned whatsoever earlier in the Megillah, are all to a man hung. The fight, the war, had to do with a fight against, primarily, Amalek. And the question is, what is Haman's Nachas? The bottom here of page 1, the Gemara in Gittin, a parallel Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sarivav. At Tana, Naaman, Gertoshev Haya, there's various people in history. Naaman was the chief of staff of Aram, of the Arameans, in Nach, in Malachim Bet, the whole story about him, and how he became not exactly a convert, but a Gertoshev. Whole discussion of what exactly that means in terms of his abandonment of idolatrous practice, but probably not actually converting to Judaism. Nevuzaradon, Ger Tzedek Haya. Nevuzaradon was the person who raised the first temple. The first Beit HaMikdash was destroyed by Nevuzaradon. And here we see it. And many of us are familiar with this line already. But it's a lightning bolt. Mibnei Banav Shel Haman Lamdu Torah Bivnei Brak. Some Gersod have Limdu, some Lamdu. Either from the grandchildren of Haman, they taught Torah in Bnei Brak, or learned Torah, or they themselves were sitting and learning Torah, no less than in Bnei Brak. And it keeps going, Bnei Banav Shel Sisra, Lamdu Tinoka Birushalayim. Sisra, of course, also the general of King Yavin of Canaan, who fought mercilessly against the Jewish people for upwards of two decades until the famous episode with Devorah and Barak finishing him off. The whole story over there with Yael as well. Okay. Same thing with regard to Sancheriv, who is responsible, personally responsible, for exiling 10 of 12 tribes. All of these people, a rogue's gallery, if you will, maybe with the exception of Naaman, but the others, a rogue's gallery of individuals, who all of whom somehow, they made it all better, they converted to Judaism in some regard. So we turn to the next page. Let's recall what was going on in the days of the actual events of Purim. And I say again at this point, this is really all going to be, this is all a case in extremis, pulled out and elongated from the theater of the real, or maybe it's not so elongated if you see those two stories at the beginning, but it really does have implications about our own belief in a person's capacity to do tshuva, to repent, to change one's ways, to recreate oneself. Is there a point of no return? Is there a point after which we would say, a very complicated topic beyond the scope of this morning, beyond this narrow slice of it, but would there be a point where we say, everyone's invited to tshuva, who's me, except for? And there are certain cases the Gemara deals with in other contexts, acher, etc. But here let's talk about this one in particular. We're all familiar with the Megillah we will read shortly, and the most triumphant moments of the Megillah in the 8th parak, three short psukim, Mordechai yatzin lifnei hamelech b'levush malchut, tchelet v'chur, v'ateret zahav gedolah v'tachrich butz, v'argaman, v'ha'ir shushan zahola v'samecha. Everyone is overjoyed. Here comes Mordechai, dressed to the nines, wearing the king's raiments, and going in the streets, of Shushan. V'yehudim haita hor v'simcha v'sasim v'ikar, u'v'chol medino medino v'chol ir v'ir, makom asher dvarim avodato magia, simcha v'sasim l'yehudim, mishna v'yom tov, wherever the word arrives, everyone is thrilled to pieces. And v'rabi me'ame ha'aretz midyadim, kinafal pachar ha'yehudim aleihem. Many of the people who are there, the Ame Ha'aretz, pejoratively we use the term Ame Ha'aretz to refer to those who are ignorant, but the Ame Ha'aretz means, literally, the people of the land, the people from all over, were converting to Judaism en masse. It was a popular campaign, practically. Kinafal pachar ha'yehudim aleihem, the fear of the Jewish people had fallen upon them, and therefore they were converting. And that means, then, that among those people, it is altogether possible, that there could have been people who were descendants of Amalek as well. Doesn't seem to indicate that it was people except for Amalekites as such. So maybe they indeed were joining the parade. It was very popular to be a Jew at that time. The sun was shining on the Jewish people there in Shushan. And yet, we have a story of someone who seems to be described as a convert to Judaism from the nation of Amalek, who is summarily executed. And I entitled it here, Shaul's Willing Executioner, paraphrasing Daniel Goldhagen's title from the book of, I don't remember what year it was from now, 05, 04, maybe it's earlier. And that's, of course, the very, very beginning of Shmuel Bet. After Shaul died, David came to this place called Ziklag. He was not aware that Shaul was dead. You can read the story for yourself. Enough time to read through every single line. But someone comes to tell him that Shaul and Yonatan have died, have been killed. And he starts to ask him some questions. Who told you? He says, well, I was standing there when it happened. And there in Pasuk Chet, verse 8, Pasuk 8, over there, Vayomer li mi'ata. He asked me, who are you? Namely, Shaul asked me, this youth, who are you? Va'umar, I said to him, Va'umar ilav, Amaleki Anochi, I am an Amalekite. Remember that the whole reason why Shaul lost his kingdom was because he had failed to obliterate Amalek. He spared the loot that he had taken, particularly the animals. And he spared Agag with all of its tragic implications for Haman ha'Agagi, Haman, who is descendant of that king, Agag. So here, this youth, seeing Shaul already mortally wounded and on the road to dying, and had asked him, who are you? And I told him, I'm from Amalek. And the boy recounts to David HaMelech, who's not yet the Melech yet, he's going to become the Melech soon, this is what happened. He asked me to help him be finished off. He asked me to kill him. So I did. Verse 10, Pasuk Yod, V'amod alav, V'emtatehu, ki yadati ki lo yichya acharei noflo. I knew he would not survive. V'aykach anezer shal rosho, V'etz adam asher al zro'o, V'avi'em el adumi heina. I took the crown. I took the armband that he wore that was a symbol of his majesty. And I'm bringing it here to you, David HaMelech. I've done all the right things. And indeed, David HaMelech asks him, it's unclear if it's incredulous, in an incredulous fashion, or if he just is curious, but he asks him again, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer David Alanar Magidlo, Emi Ze'ata. So where exactly are you from? Vayomer Ben Ish Gera Maleki Anochi. He tells him now, he refines what he said previously. I am not really an Amaleki. I am the son of a convert from Amalek. My father was an Amalekite. Okay. Says David to him, Pasuk Yud Dalet, Vayomer Lav David, Eich lo yoreita yishloach yad l'shachet et Mashiach Hashem. How were you not fearful to send your hand out against the anointed of God? Vayikra David l'echad me'anarim, Vayomer gash begabo, Vayakeo vayamot. He asks one of the lads who was there to find, to take this son of the Amalekite convert out and kill him. And the last words David ever says to him, Vayomer elav David, Damcha al roshcha. You have put your blood upon yourself. By your own confession, I put you to death because you struck your hand out against the anointed one of the Jewish people. And indeed, as we turn to the third page, the Mechilta, the Rabbi Shmuel, this appears also in the Psikta, it appears in other places as well. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Nishba ha-makom b'kisei ha-kovod shalo, she'im yavo echa mikol ha-umot ha-olam yitgayir she'yikabluhu. The Holy One, blessed be He, swore on His heavenly throne that if anyone from any of the nations will come to convert to Judaism, they will be accepted. Ula'amalek ulaveto lo yakabluhu. But Amalek and his household, they will not be accepted. Shenamar, as it states in the book of Shmuel Bet, at the end of the first parak, Vayomer David el hanar hamagid lo, emi ze'ata vayomer ben ish ger amaleki anochi. Exactly what we just read a moment ago, the proof text is that the man, the boy, whatever it is, said to David HaMelech, I am the son of a convert from Amalek. Nizkar David be'otah sha'ah. I imagine the blood ran cold in David's body at that moment when he remembered Mashinamer l'Moshe Rabbeinu, what was told to Moshe Rabbeinu, Im yavo ech nikol umar sheba'olam litgayer sheyikabluhu, umi beito shel Amalek shelo yikabluhu. That the exclusion to the acceptance of converts is with Amalek. We do not accept Amalekites. Remember the Mechilta, the Medrash Halacha on the book of Shmot. It is one of the earliest of the Midrashim that we have. It's not Medrash Agada, it's Medrash Halacha. And it carries some serious tokef, some serious power in terms of its legislative import. It's not just homiletics. So David HaMelech remembers what Moshe Rabbeinu was told. And Miyad, right away, he says, I'm going to put you to death. Kipicha Anabicha. And that's why it says in the Torah, Midor, Dor. At the end of Parshat B'Shalach, Kiyad al Kes Kam, Milchama B'Amalek, Midor, Dor, from one generation to the next, unending, ceaseless, until they are completely wiped out. And David HaMelech remembered this, and therefore he put him to death. So here, this is somewhat of a problem, I suppose, in as much as we just saw, Gemara says that the children, the descendants of Haman, were learning Torah in Bnei Brak. Were they non-Jewish people hiding out, teaching Torah? No, the implication is they converted to Judaism. Is that permissible? Is that acceptable? And this Medrash Halacha seems to indicate it would not be. And certainly the story involving this Ger Amaleki, by his own testimony, he was deserving of death because he himself, the Ger Amaleki, said this about himself. Says the Meshech Chachma on Parsha Ki Teitze, coined from Davinsk. Habehada Amr b'Mechilta Shehara Ger Amaleki Shein Mekablin Ger Amalek. The fact that it says the Mechilta, he's quoting the source right above you, page 3 at the top of the page. That source, Hainu Lekach Hargo Behodat Atzmo. That's why David was entitled to kill this man on his own admission, on his own confession. Kmo Ben Noach Shenerig Al Pi Atzmo Ubarur. like anyone who is of the Gentile world, who can be killed based on their own confession. If he had really converted to Judaism, we have a principle, Ein Adam Meisim Atzmo Rasha, a person would not incriminate themselves. We'll see why more in depth in a while. But it's a juridical principle that applies to Jewish people. With a Ben Noach who was outside of the system of Jewish jurisprudence, outside of halacha, so that individual is entitled to confess to a crime and be prosecuted on account of the confession. But in Judaism, for within the system of halacha, for Jewish people, a confession would generally not be credible. Here, this Ger HaMaleki said as much too. David HaMelech, says the Mashiach Chochma, why did David HaMelech put him to death? Simply because he realized that based on the Mechilta, it's impossible that he really converted. Either he's lying, or he thought he converted and he really didn't. And if he tried, it wouldn't work. And therefore, the fact that he had, by his own hand, Damcha Beroshcha, you yourself said, Damcha Al Roshcha, excuse me, you said, Kipicha Anabicha, your mouth has answered for you, has testified against you. You are deserving, therefore, of death. And that is certainly something that gives us pause, because the story itself seems to indicate that at a certain point, this person did say, but I'm a ger, and David rejected it. Okay. The Gemara Masechet Yevamot, in discussing issues having to do with gerut, and I stress again here, talking halacha of l'maase, but the Gemara here, I only clipped part of it in the English, but we'll see it here in the Hebrew. It's a little more extensive, just a piece of it. That the Gemara here is going back and forth to discuss what would happen with people who converted for insincere reasons, for opportunistic reasons, for reasons that are driven by some other motivation other than wanting to be Jewish for its own sake. Would that work? Would it not work? And there are opinions, mikan ulekan. But this is actually, ends up being the deciding opinion here. Shehaya Rabbi Nechemia Omer, Echad Geire Arayot, those who, if you remember the story of the Shomronim, those who converted because of lions that were sent into the Shomron, miraculously, they believed it was a sign from God that he needed to convert. They converted, therefore, out of fear, so as to not be attacked by lions, these indigenous peoples who lived in these regions. Ve'echad Geire Chalomot, those who convert on account of dreams that they have. Rashi here makes a reference to some kind of master of dreams, whether it was sent to them by some kind of a malach. So they have a dream they have to convert. Is that a good enough reason? So Ve'echad Geire Mordechai Ve'Esther, the people who converted at the time of Mordechai and Esther, says the Gemara, Einan Geirin. They are not converts. The conversion doesn't work because it's driven and motivated by something else. What was that something else in the days of Mordechai and Esther? Said it in the Megillah. They were afraid. They were terrified and petrified, and therefore they were driven because they saw that the star of the Jewish people was rising. The star of Mordechai was high. His stock was rising. The moon that was Esther, Esther, she was shining already as the queen of Persia. There was no way they could vanquish them. They tried by force. It didn't work. So everybody is deciding, we might as well join the Jews. So we're going to join up. No good, says the Gemara. When would it be good? Ashid gairu b'zman hazeh, until they will convert in this day. In this day, meaning the days, basically, Rabbi Nechemia, the days already of the Talmud. So the Gemara asks, b'zman hazeh sal kadaitach, literally in this time. You don't think there was anyone who ever converted? What about Shmaya Naftali and what about Unkelus? There are many different people. You can have a whole a list of people. It's just the tip of the iceberg of people who were among the finest of the Jewish people who did convert. So what do you mean b'zman hazeh? Ein ba ki b'zman hazeh. Has to be like this time period in history, time of exile, a time when a person's motivations would not be suspected of being insouciant owing to some outside external pressure. Ha itmar ola amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta mishmei derav halacha kedivrei haomer kulam geirim hen. Indeed, that is the halacha for most instances. The whole question about the kutim in Kiddushin, and elsewhere, as to whether or not they were actually accepted completely as Jews, partially as Jews, it's a whole deal over there. But for our purposes, the Gemara here says, and that's the bold and underlined line, that, and this is actually the Psak, that we say that these people are actually ex post facto Jews. All these people who got converted for all these reasons, including the Geirim in the days of Mordechai and Esther. So the Gemara here, just further on, a few lines later, points out that in the days of the Mashiach, we will not accept converts. Why? Again, same issue, that the stock of the Jewish people will be so high, the Mashiach will come. That will already not be a good reason for people to become Jewish. We won't accept them. And also, what was a time when there were those who were anointed by the Almighty to be kings of Israel. No better paradigms than the father, son, David and Shlomo. David Malka Mashiach and Shlomo Malka Mashiach. Both of these, Shlomo HaMelech and his father, David Malka Mashiach, in those days they did not accept converts. The Bali Tosfot here point out that perhaps we could say that, because there are certain examples, Bat Paro was married to Shlomo, and we're learning this now in our Shir Malachim Aleph every Tuesday. This is what's coming up. We're talking now about Bat Paro, how did Shlomo Melech marry the daughter of the princess, of the king of Egypt, of the Pharaoh, the princess. So all of this, Yiti Hagiti and various others who did convert. So the Bali Tosfot basically say, that's the underlined line here, page 3, V'yei Shlomar demi atzman nidgayru. Maybe of their own accord, they came by themselves, and they decided they're converting. Maybe we wouldn't accept them and go out and solicit them. Maybe if they came to us, we wouldn't accept them. But somehow, they figured out a way. They converted on their own. Kid Ashkan gabi Mordechai v'Esther, v'rabi me'ome ha'aretz mit yahadim. It could be read, potentially, as not that they were actually bate din, where they had the Gedolei Olam sitting and looking at each person with a constituted badge and saying, are you worthy, are you worthy? But people were running en masse and saying, we're going to become Jews. We're going to take a minimal bezdin, we'll take three hedyoto, three commoners, we'll sit them down, we'll say to them, okay, we're converting, and this is what we say, and this is what we believe. We dunk in a mikvah, those who needed a bris, men needed a bris, they had a bris, they went mila, tefila, and kabbalah's little mitzvahs, done. And maybe that's what it means, because the idea mit yahadim means they are becoming Jewish. Sounds like they're almost driving the process on their own. Doesn't say they came to speak to someone about becoming Jewish. Doesn't say they sat in front of a constituted bezdin, that is a bezdin kavua or some such thing, in Shushan, if they had such things, which I assume they did. But on the contrary, they simply did it of their own accord. They arrived on the scene and wanted to join. The halacha really, in the end, follows, though. Halacha k'divrei Omer, kulam gerim heim. They actually truly converts to the Jewish people, and they're accepted as such. Page 4. So, there are various different approaches that we're trying to understand how it could be, notwithstanding that the Gemara does say that there were Amalekim, who converted to Judaism. They came in. Nebanav Shohaman. I found just the Baal Turim here, Parsha Tetzaveh, points out that in the days of Naaman had great respect for the Kehuna, that Naaman had great respect for Judaism. He didn't actually convert entirely, but basically it says, Shabikish Adam Alasat Mizbeach, Nid Karev Tachat Kanfer Shechina, Umibanov Lamdu Torah Barabim. From his grandchildren already, they were learning Torah, they were teaching Torah rather in public, some such thing, on account of him coming closer. Not 100% clear that he actually converted, but at least the Baal Turim wants to allow for the prospect that someone who shows great respect is coming close. It might not mean that Naaman himself converted wholesale, but maybe someone later on down the pike came into the fold. Here we come to the Gilyonei HaShas of Rav Yosef Engel. No idea if I'm related to him, so I'd like to be related to him. I just have no way of knowing whether I am or I am not, so I'm just proud to share the last name. I don't know. But here he quotes the Gemara. He quotes a question that was asked by the Tiferet Shlomo. Shlomo Miradomsk asked the following question, that it is clear that when we say Zachar Asher Salcha Amalek, the Mechilta, I mentioned the Psikta, they say straight out, we don't accept converts from Amalek. And that in fact, that's what it means. Zachar Asher Salcha Amalek means there's an indelible mark, I would almost say a mark of Cain, that is upon them, to wit, that is such that they can never be extirpated from that, expiated rather, from that sin. It can be extirpated, but not expiated. Okay, enough with the $20 words. Next. The Gemara here, the Gilyonei HaShas says the following. The Lokash Amidi, I'm on the underlying lines here. This is not really a question. He wants to answer the question of Ferek Shlomo. How could it be that Mivnei Banav Lamdu Torah, Shalhamad Lamdu Torah Bnei Brak? He says, the Mishkachat Be'isha Mizera Amalek, Sheniseit La'akum, She'eno Mizera Amalek. It must be a woman who was descended of Amalek, who was married to a non-Jewish man, who himself was not an Amalekite. V'yaldo lo ben, and they had a child. Da ben ahu einenu mityaches lezera Amalek. He's not really related to the zera, to the lineage of Amalek. De ba'akum halach Achar hazachar. When it says mi'ibranim shalhaman, it means the grandchildren. But grandchildren means from the mother's side. If it's grandchildren from the mother's side, that's acceptable because in the non-Jewish world, we don't have matrilineal descent. In the non-Jewish world, it's patrilineal descent. The Jewish world, matrilineal descent, that's our Masorah. And in the non-Jewish milieu, they would follow patrilineal in terms of questions of identity. But this is, of course, not a Jewish concept. Here, the non-Jewish person who converted to Judaism, who was teaching Torah in this place, was indeed a grandchild of Amalek. Look at that. But from the mother's side, not the father's side. And therefore, you can't truly call them children of Amalek in the truest sense of what it means to be a member of that that wicked group of the wicked nation. That still, of course, leaves us with this problem about the Ger Amaleki, about how could it be, therefore, we still have the issue. Maybe his father was an Amalekite. He said, I'm the son of an Amalekite stranger. If you look at Pasuk Yud Gimel, back on page 2, sounds like it was a man who was talking about his own father, Ben Ish, Ger Amaleki Anochi, not Ben Isha, Giorat Amaleki. So therefore, the lineage continued. It wasn't wiped away. Finished. David Amalek said, I'm taking you right now. Like that.
With the mitzvah of eradicating Amalek, I don't know if they made any distinction in the DNA.
We'll come to it. Is the question, is it DNA? Is it spiritual DNA? What is it? I'm going to bomb it the next 20 minutes, 15 minutes. We'll take some questions after. But a very good point. The Rambam in Hilchot Malachim, Perek Vav, in Hilchot Malachim discusses the way in which there is two laws in the Torah. One of them is that the seven nations that lived at the time of the arrival of Jewish people in the land of Canaan, L'techaya kol neshama, the people should not be left alive. They should be killed wholesale, except if they were approached. And the Rambam, I didn't clip this part here, so I apologize. I'm just trying to stay focused. But there, just above this, he writes, they were approached and asked, do you want to make peace? They were given peaceful overtures. They were given choices about what they could do, whether that's to leave, whether that's to stay, pay a tribute, to accept the basic laws of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws, of ethics, of morality, and spirituality that are bound up with what it means to be a Ben Noach. If they refuse, then the mitzvah becomes operative. At a certain point in world history, this individual, Sancheiriv, as is well known, in 722 before the Common Era, lifted up the 10 tribes and moved them elsewhere. But he did that for everybody. He was doing that to all peoples. He was trying to mix the nations up. And indeed, having done so, Bilbel Ha'umot, he mixed everybody into different places, means that we're not really sure who's from which nation anymore. And we'll come to think about this together in just a couple of minutes. First, the Rambam himself. Aval Shiva Amamin va'amolek shlo yishlimu. I'm on page 4 in the middle of the page. Those who did not make peace, did not make an agreement. E manichim mehem neshama shenemar kein ta'aseh l'chol v'gomer v'rak me'orei ha'amim l'techai kol neshama. If they have not accepted, they refused a peaceful settlement, so none of them can be left alive. In that case, he says here, if the seven nations or Amalek refuse to accept the peaceful settlement, then they all have to be killed. V'cheinu omer v'amalek. That's what it says with regard to Amalek. Timcha et zecher Amalek. How do we know it only means people didn't make peace? Shenemar lo haita ir asher yishlima el b'nei Yisrael bilti achivi yoshve giv'on. Et hakol lachu b'milchama kim eit Hashem haita l'chazek et libam likrat ha'milchama et Yisrael l'man hecharimam miklal sheshalchum sham lo kiblu. The very fact that the Navi states that there were no peaceful responses means there must have been overtures, and we know that only one acceded. That was the Chivi, those who lived in Gibeon. Everyone else said, we're going to stay and fight, and we could care less because we think we can beat the Jewish people. And of course, they were wrong, fortunately for us. But at least the peaceful overture is there. Notice who was just included in the possibility of a peaceful overture in the Rambam. Seven nations and Amalek. If the peaceful overture would have been accepted, then there would not any longer be a reason to wipe them out. So the Rambam says. Says the Ravid, the Hasagot of the Ravid, the critical gloss of Avram ben David, Avram ibn Daud, as he's sometimes called, of Posker, he writes, this is a mistake. Amar Avram zeshibush. It's just there's something wrong here. Now, I don't really know what Zesh Shibush means. If I want to be charitable, I would say he's saying, oh, there's something wrong with the way it was written out, but of course the Rambam didn't mean this. Or he might just mean, this is completely the Rambam, you're wrong. I'm not 100% sure how to read it. Zesh Shibush, El Shiyach Lomar Hishlimu Lekabel HaMitzvot. It can't be that Amalek is supposed to be mentioned here. If you look at the Hebrew text, it comes to the foreground more obviously. The Rivet basically says, it cannot say the seven nations and Amalek that didn't accept the peaceful overture. It must mean the seven nations, if they don't accept the peaceful overture, then we don't let them live. And here's what it says with regard to Amalek. It says, kill them no matter what. Wipe them out no matter what. Just read the text and it says, it's a shibush. It just can't it can't be with the word Amalek sitting there. They make some peaceful agreement. He does say here, Elishayahu lomar hishlimu lekabel hamitzvot. But maybe we could say that it means that they're going to accept the mitzvot, which seems to imply, maybe the Rivet is saying, it means they could have actually, if they would completely convert to Judaism, to accept everything, maybe that would be the out, maybe. The Kesef Mishnah here rejects what the Rivet says. He quotes the Rivet here, bottom of page 4, Rabbi Yosef Karo writes, Kotev HaRivet Zeshibush Elishayahu lomar hishlimu lekabel hamitzvot ad kan sono. And he writes, Tamo lomar shiva amamin v'amalek af al pi sheishlimu v'ratzu l'kabal aleihem mas v'avdut horgin otam. Sorry, the scan didn't work out for me. The resolution is terrible here. But even though they wanted to make peace, he thought it meant they'll make peace. They wanted to accept it upon themselves, the tribute, and to accept a lower status, a status of servitude, essentially. We'd still kill them. Elisha Efsar Lito and Ba'ad Rabbeinu, we might be able to say on behalf of our Rebbe, meaning the Rambam, V'lomar Shebichlal Hishlimu Kabbalat Sheva Mitzvot. Maybe the Hishlimu means the acceptance of the seven mitzvot, Kibul Aleim Sheva Mitzvot, Harayotzu Michlal Shiva Amin Umichlal Amalek, V'harehen Kibnei Noach Hakserim. Maybe what our Rabbi, the Rambam, wanted to say is, if the seven nations, and if Amalek would accept upon themselves the seven mitzvot, Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, not converting to Judaism, but just accepting Sheva Mitzvot, they're no longer called the seven nations, they're no longer called definitionally Amalek. They've changed the game. The name of it is now different because they're not really under that rubric of being known as the seven nations with its characteristics, nor under the rubric of Amalek per se. And this machloket, what does the Rambam mean here, is of course not the first time or the last time. We see this in the Yad HaChazakah. Try to understand what is the Rambam getting at in his statement. If you just look at it, what it says on the page, it says, if they would agree to have shalom, to have peace, then we would not kill them. And neither the seven nations nor Amalek as a nation. And then the Rivet saying, no, that's a mistake. It can't really be true. They're just going to say, we made peace with you. Said the Kesef Mishnah, peace must mean also the seven Noahide laws, and that must be the out. Page 5, the Rambam here in Hilchot Sanhedrin points out this idea I mentioned before, that in other Mesim Atzmo Rasha, here he writes, there's a scriptural decree, Zerat HaKotuvi, She'ein Mamitin Beitin, V'lo Malkin Et Ha'adam Behodat Piv, El Al Pi Shnayim Edim. It cannot be that a person would put to death or be whipped on account of their own testimony, unless it was done in due process with two witnesses testifying in a constituted Beit Din. V'zesh harig Yoshua Achan. Yoshua killed Achan. V'David killed the Ger Amaleki. Lodat PM. Says the Rambam, Hora'at Sha'ahaita Odin Malchutaya. Either it was a temporary injunction, or it was because he's the king, he felt this was a rebellious act. What did the Rambam not say? The dog that didn't bark, as they used to say with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. It didn't say that this Ger Amaleki, this convert from Amalek, was not really a Jew.
It had nothing to do with it.
Exactly. Instead, the Rambam has to find another reason. And he groups Achan, who, if you remember the story of Yoshua and Achan is 100% Jewish, with the Ger Amaleki and the story of David, as two examples where, since we know the principle that applies to anyone within the Jewish legal system, called Ein Adam Meisim Atzmo Rasha, right? Ein Mamitin Oto Ve Malkin Otlo, right? Unless Behodat Piv, he can't say it from his own lips, but he didn't say with regard to the Ger Amaleki, David killed him because he saw he wasn't a Jew. Meaning, he accepted, the Rambam, that maybe this person really did convert from the nation of Amalek, and that we could accept a convert from Amalek. The Rambam here goes on, and he basically says, you know, the idea here is a person maybe is a bitter spirit. They're looking for a reason why they want to get themselves killed, but they don't want to kill themselves actively. They don't want to cast themselves off a roof. So they create a pretext by which they will be put to death, and they will die at the hands of someone else. So he basically says, this is just a Gzeret Melech. This is really just a divine decree that we are not allowed to do this. But if you want to know some of the reason, he basically gives you some of the reason over here. That's the argument from silence. This was the argument brought about by the Kol Mevaser, but Meshulam Roth died in 1963. It was part of, at the time of Hakamat Medina, he was involved in the Israeli rabbinate. And he quotes and criticizes, politely obviously, his colleague, Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk, who predeceased him in 1926, I believe. But he says, you know, the Mechilta had said, the Meshech Chochma had said, why did David HaMelech kill the Ger HaMaleki? Because he wasn't really a Jew. And when someone's not really Jewish, if they confess to a crime, then they're guilty, and that's it. And how do we know that? Because the Mechilta said he wasn't really able to convert. Says the Tshuvos of the Kol Mevaser, he says, yeah, but wait a second. The Rambam writes the exact opposite of this at the end of Hilchot Sanhedrin. Just saw it. V'lo kotev atam la'arigo shel ger ha'maleki mitzad ha'din. L'fi she'ein mekabel ger me'malek. V'hu goy ben noach shenerek v'hodat atzma. He didn't use that argument. Why not? Because the Rambam must hold, and now you have two sources, not just Sanhedrin, but the one Hilchot Melachim, unlike what the Ravid argues, that the Shibush, really, the Kol Mevaser says no. It would seem that he could be accepted as such into the nation, against what it says in the Mechilta. This brings us to the Dion of Rav Moshe Sternbach in the Mo'adim Uzman Masholim, where he tries to explain how to make all of these moving parts move together in such a way that we can understand the idea, the prospect of the conversion of someone who heralds from the nation of Amalek. And again, here it seems like it's a machloket that's going all the way back to the Medrash Halacha. You have the Gemaras on this subject. Says the Mo'adim Zmanim Asholem. There are several articles on this topic, actually, but this is the crux, the sort of the summary of the discussion. In Kamakom Laharach, you can look it up on your own if you're interested to see it more in depth. Question that he deals with here is really twofold. One is the historical context piece. What time in history do we find ourselves in? The other one is the question of personal actions. There were those who debated the question of what kind of a mitzvah is it to kill off Amalek? So, for instance, Rav Moshe Sternbach makes the point that once there was no capability to kill off the entire nation of Amalek, there would not be a person-to-person mitzvah, theoretically, to kill one or two or 500 Amaleki people. How does he know this? He says, why did Shaul lose his kingdom? Because he didn't kill off Amalek. Okay, who was his successor? David. Why didn't David launch a campaign against Amalek? How did Shlomo HaMelech build a Beit HaMikdash before he took care of killing Amalek? We know, it's the Mesorah, that when Mashiach will come, that we will have to kill off Amalek. So Mashiach will come, this will be very difficult. First of all, how will we identify who Amalek is? So for that, we'd have to wait for Mashiach to actually say, it's so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, which would beg the question again, is it a question of DNA? We just saw an example that once it goes to the mother, it's already, doesn't exist, perhaps. Even on the father's side, according to the Rambam, it would seem, if you take the Kol Mevaser, they could convert. So what are we exactly referring to? And part of that is, the answer that he gives, is you know why David didn't do it? You know why Shlomo didn't do it? Because after this event, in the days of Shaul HaMelech, once Agag already had impregnated these women, even though he himself was killed, and they already were having children, everyone cut and run. And since they had already spread themselves out across the globe, it was no longer possible to identify really where all of them are, where they live, and how we could find them. In the days even of Mordechai and Esther, you notice that after the abatement, if there were Amalekites living there, okay, they took care of Haman, took care of the 10 sons, but there wasn't. That was the most powerful time of the Jewish people to that point in antiquity, where they had wielded tremendous political power. They didn't exercise it to go find the Amalekites that were lurking in the shadows. Why not? Couldn't find them. And Moshe Schnurnbach says, we're basically locked in this mitzvah, according to many, until the time of Mashiach. The Sefer HaChinuch disagrees, but if you look in the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, it's a mitzvah on Tzibur. If you look in the Sefer Yerayim, it's a mitzvah on the Melech. And the Chinuch holds every person has this mitzvah. So it's a debate, but obviously you want to err on the side of not doing the wrong thing in this regard. I say again now, toward the end of the shiur, this whole topic is obviously la'alach of l'olamase in its presentation. But here he comes to the crux of the matter. He writes that it's true that David killed off that Ger Amaleki, but he killed him off at a particular moment in Jewish history. And he killed him off at a particular moment in Jewish history where that Ger Amaleki had done something which involved having blood on his hands, the blood of a Jewish person on his hands, and especially a king. And it would seem, according to what we're saying, I say again, it's never fair in a shiur. Let's just sit with all the sources, go through every single one from start to finish, so I'm clipping here and there. But he says, according to all these arguments that I'm making, it seems that the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Amalekim were wicked. We always have associated, until now, Amalek with rank evil. They're the embodiment of evil. He says, in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they were all Rishayim. Shayu. Sherotzu limcho de'am Yisrael. They were trying their best to destroy the Jewish nation. Moshe was told by Hashem, make a war against them, kill every last one. Don't accept any of them to be converts. They were wicked in those days. According to that, Samach David Amelch B'Shah Shabal Afan of Ger Amaleki, Shechata, Sheharag Shaul, Lo Kibel Hadanit Gayer, She'ein Lekablam B'chi Hai Gavnik, Moshe Katavnu, i.e., why was Shaul being killed? He was being put to death because he failed to kill Amalek. He was now in a war, not actually with Amalek, by the way, but he was in a war. He was already on his deathbed. And what did this Ger Amaleki do? He showed up at a time when there was obviously still great tension between the Jewish nation and the Amalekite nation. He killed the king of Israel. He killed Shaul. He had blood, by his own testimony, he had blood on his hands. And that, says the Muad'im Uzzan, that's what's going on. V'hemin lo behodat pi v'hargo behorad shah. He killed him in a temporary injunction. K'mavur b'rambam, perek yudchet the Sanhedrin, omidin melech deshari ayin shah. And that's why he wasn't rejecting that the Ger Amaleki could have converted to Judaism. Okay, he's fully a Jew. But that he did this, deserving of death. Was it juridical? Didn't need to be, for one of two reasons. A, hura'at sha'ah, because the tensions are running high between the Jewish people and the Amalekite nation at that time. Two, because the reality of a king's din, that he doesn't have to work judicially, he can work extrajudicially within the confines of the law, that's the power given to a king. Aval, and this is the most important point, the most shocking point, the most difficult point, but I think a true point. Aval nimtza mizor shal amalek, shahaya b'shalom im Yisrael, ve'eno shutuf, afilu b'grom l'maasem ha'achzori im neged Yisrael. If we would find one from the nation of Amalek, which is at peace with the Jewish people, has not participated even in a causal fashion, not even grumma, with any of the cruel actions taken against the Jewish people, Shari lekabel otam kigerim, be permissible to accept them as converts. Va'ati shapir hada amrinan, and it's very well stated, this works according to what we know, mi b'nei banav shohaman lam de Torah b'rabim b'nei brak, de mayri b'gerim ka'elu. That's who we're talking about in the Nepon of Shalham Alam Torah Nebrak. At a time when there isn't a hot war between the Jewish people and the Amalekite nation, maybe it's a cold war because ideationally what they stand for, it would leave open the door to someone, or someones, plural, who do not have blood on their hands, not in a historical time of great tension between the nations, that he says this would be acceptable. So again, the Mechilta holds it's impossible. The Mechilta even says that David remembered what Moshe had been told by Hashem, says the Rav Sternbach. True enough. But that's the historical moment of the evil, wicked people of Amalek living at that time. But if Amalek was no longer acting like Amalek, if Amalek decided to come forward and choose to join the Jewish people, again, without having blood on their hands, even causally, in terms of causation, then it would be acceptable to join the Jewish people. And there's a split here between perpetrators and children of perpetrators, between people who have done horrible things and their capacity for tshuva, which I think is still an open-ended question. It seems with Amalekites, the answer is very clearly no. I often think of the B'nai Haman that are hung, not only as literally his physical progeny, but obviously also as his devotees, his protégés in waiting, who each of them with their own agenda for what they would do to carry out their own father's plot that was obviously not meant to be. And of course, then the time lag between his killing, his execution, and theirs, owing to the time of the war that we are coming to remember this coming week. We turn to the last page. I'm just going to close with this. This Gemara, very well known, was quoted a little bit earlier this morning, a very well known Gemara. We've just heard outside, so we'll see it inside. But Yatsu Batachti Dahar, there they were encamped at the base of the mountain. Amar Rav Dimi Barcha Barchasa, Melamit Shikafa Kadosh Baruch Hu Aleihem Et Ahar Kegigit. Like an overturned tub or casket or cask of some sort is held over them, the mountain, and he forced them. But Amar Lahem Imat Mekalim Torah Mutav, if you accept it, good. Bimlav Shantek Furatchem. And if not, that's where you'll be buried. The Amar of Acha Bar Yaakov Mikan Mudar Rabba Lo Raita. From here, there is a check against the Torah. It's a caveat emptor. Everybody could say we were forced into it. Amar Rav Acha Pichein Hodor Kiblu B'Meach Hashverosh. In the days of Hashverosh, everybody accepted it. Dichtiv Kimu V'Kibla Yehudim Kimu Masha Kiblu Kfar. They accepted what they had already. Now they accepted. They fulfilled what they had previously accepted. Dafka Purim time. Dafka this moment. What was so novel about this moment, and not any other moment before it? It had to wait specifically for this period of time. Many, many answers advanced. The Sfat Emet, at the bottom of the page, I think sheds light on this Gemara, based on everything that we're talking about. That was to me a startling revelation just in how to read the Pasuk, that is the baseline of all this about people converting. In the pasuk v'rabim ma'ame ha'aretz mityadim kinafal pachad yehudim aleihem, that verse that have many from the nations were converting because they had the terror of the Jews upon them. V'lichor akasha, this is very strange. Ki lo ba'u b'nei Yisrael hi'lachem rakim ha'kamim aleihem l'ra'a u'ma pachad haya lahem li'hitgayer ha'yedei zeh. What were they so terrified about? What were they afraid of? That they were going to be next? You can only be afraid you're going to be next if you were one of the people who was sharpening your knife for the last 12 months, awaiting the day. All the whole story, most of the story of Purim takes place in Nisan. And it's all about how he's drawing lots for what's going to happen the following Adar. So everybody's spending that whole time preparing. And the decree was annulled, was not annulled, a new decree sent out, etc. But the 13th of Adar, which was meant to be the day, God forbid, of destruction, ended up being the day of fighting. Who were they fighting? Megillah says explicitly, the people who were against them. So what are all the other people afraid of? It doesn't make sense. Why were they? So they were all converting as a result? And just say, okay, you know, we want to be at peace with you. It seems like a rather large step. V'tachim lefarish ki aleihem chozer al amalekim kat haman harasha. The Torah, the Megillah means, v'rabi me'ame ha'aretz mityadim, many among the nations of the world are converting to Judaism, for the fear of the Jews has fallen upon Amalek. Aleihem, upon them, we usually read, the pshat means, went back on the people, because they're the subject here of the pasuk. But the Sfat Emet says, maybe it really means that it fell back on the Amalekites. Once the fear of the Jewish people is upon Amalek, its power starts to abate. It recedes into the background. When it recedes, this impediment to spirituality, to godliness, which in our world means the Torah and the mitzvot, when that's removed, that's when the Torah's light starts to shine like never before. He writes, Shema mechasim et hapnim, v'lachein heim monim livnei olim l'hitgayer v'liknos tachat kanfei ashrina. It's a revolutionary idea. You know why people aren't converting en masse to Judaism, says the Sfat Emet? Because there's a power in the world, a spiritual drag called Amalek. More than a drag. It's an impediment, an obstacle. It's covering the internal, covering the face of everything. And therefore, people don't realize that they would want to convert to Judaism. Now the fear of the Jews was upon, not the nations of the world, but upon the nation of Amalek, because they were put on notice. Here, all their leadership was just killed. Here, all the people who had been making these plans were all being put to death. Nitosfu gerim b'Yisrael. all the people came to convert now to Judaism. V'imzem Yusuf, Mashadikdiku ha-mefarshim la-mekiblu gerim b'nei Amalek. That's why the Mefarshim describe, they go back and forth and ask the question, why did they accept gerim from Amalek? As was written, in the Sefer Matot Levi, he wrote over there that it does not mean Amalekim. Matot Levi was Shlomo HaLevi Alkabetz. The idea here is that the Amei Haaretz who converted did not include Amalekim. Shlomo Alkabetz, by the way, as an aside, this is a fascinating thing. They say apocryphally that the Manot HaLevi is the commentary of Rav Shlomo Alkabetz on Megillat Esther. And then when he got married, the gift he gave to his wife, I don't know if he probably sure gave her a ring too, is he gave her this Perush. The Manot HaLevi was the gift of the Levi, Rav Shlomo Levi Alkabetz. He handed it to her. So it's an interesting idea. Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, of course, we visit with every week. He's the author of L'Chadodi, a common referent. But not Amalek. Amalek was not among the people who could convert, because they are the obstacle at the time of this kind of tension, this time of warring, where Amalek is trying Davka actively to destroy the Jewish people. But the idea here that the Jewish people, and then some, had a great reawakening at the time of Purim, is perhaps bound up with the idea that at the moment that the fear is struck within the Amalekites who have not been put to death, but who are living in the terror for their lives, their power spiritually no longer has any kind of force to block the power of Sinai, if you will. And that might be an explanation here for why it is that Dafka in the days of Purim, again, many answers advanced, but Dafka, many Gerim, and among the many Gerim from among the nations, who are no longer feeling the impediment of Amalek, were also the Jewish people themselves, suddenly realizing that the sky was not even the limit in terms of their relationship with Hashem, and the extent to which everything that had happened to them was really b'chasdei Hashem, and that notwithstanding all of the tensions and the problems and the difficulties and the blood that was almost spilled, that would have taken place with a lot of people just standing by idly and watching, it didn't make them guilty to the extent that they couldn't convert to Judaism. And this is the challenge for us, to be able to appreciate that even within the nation of Amalek, it is possible, conceivably, according to many, that they could, at some times in history, without blood on their hands, to actually convert to Judaism and to have the full status of being known as Gerim B'Yisrael, Gerei Tzedek, within the Jewish nation. But it depends on historical context. It depends on personal responsibility, indeed, with regard to Amalek. And let's hope and pray that whatever our obstacles are, Baruch Miut, Bagash Miut, at the time of Purim, we have that sense of freedom, that sense of liberty, and that sense that we too are excited without spiritual obstacles. We're excited to be Mekabel the Torah once again, Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim, that we should also be Mekayim, the words, the Kimu Mashikiblu Kvar, to accept the Torah again as well. Okay, now some questions. Yeah. Rabbi.
The Gemara in Shabbos, which seems to indicate that the Bnei Israel really didn't have a choice. They had to accept the Torah or the mountain would fall upon them. And in the Torah, they could accept the people. But in some ways, it's not much different than the Gemara, because they all of a sudden they got religious because, they were going to kill them, so they looked at themselves in a different way.
Yeah, okay. That's so, the Gemara Megillah, Godel Hasar Tabat. Yeah, the removal of that ring was more powerful when the ring came off and given to Amon than 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses. Nothing on. Okay.